net, the 2 meter, the Blue Ridge 2 meter net. Well, Larry, I'm gonna correct you on one thing, right quick. And the first remote control was the children in the house. Hey, go turn that TV, change the channel. It's time to watch this. So yeah, that's the first remote controls.
Yeah. Oh, you got me there. Yes, I was. See, I had a younger brother, 3 years younger, and this was when he was still a toddler, you see. So, yes, your children are your first remote control. Well, back in those days. Now, the remote, I look at we have two recliners. Dad had this in their viewing room. We have a lamp table between our two recliners. And on that table, let's see, 2, 4, 6, 7, there's 7 remotes. Now, there's something that, I know there's been attempts to fix that issue, but, you know, it's hard to get away from having so many remotes. There's one specifically for the television, one specifically for the soundbar, one specifically for the, it just keeps going on. 7 remotes. A little too much of a good thing, perhaps. Oh, well, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining. I'm fortunate to have what I have. It's a nice TV, and I'll have to thank Donna for, she spent everything. I thought, well, what better use of, you know, she washes with me, and I didn't want to hear any complaints, so let her choose. It was the same way with the refrigerator. She wanted, and the dishwasher, the washer and dryer. She does the shopping. We do a little confab and decide on something together. And she's very good at doing that research and stuff. Reading consumer reports and all that to find out what's the, you know, the repair history on various things. And it's all turned out real well. How do you do it in your house? KK4JBQ.
KO4HKX. Typically in my house, when it comes to TVs, my wife just tells me, you take care of it. I don't want nothing to do with it. She watches very little TV. I don't know if it's because I'm watching TV or what, but she only watches it when I'm not around. But and when it comes to the dishwasher, kitchen appliances, we get together and do that, both of us, and, you know, some of it come down to price, what we could afford, and some of it was, okay, we'll spend a little bit more to get a better option, you know, that kind of thing. Discuss it. And I'm sure that's what a lot of folks do in their households.
It's good for a couple, especially, to do these things. The choice of appliances and, you know, whatever it is that you share, the decision-making should be shared, you know. I recall, well, when we purchased a new refrigerator, that's a have-to, you know. You just, when the other one conked out, I knew from talking with friends about their issues with refrigerators and the repair of such. Today, it may have been different in the past, but today a refrigerator doesn't last as long as it used to. And when it goes bad, the repairs don't last as long as they used to. So what's that telling you, you know? And so she couldn't find any. We moved into this house in the late 90s. Everything back then, and it's sort of made a return now. White kitchens are all the rage now. At least that's what we see on television. The designers put white appliances in white cabinets and a white countertop and such as that. Anyhow, so she was shopping for a new refrigerator and couldn't find a white refrigerator. Maybe the white thing had gone into a dip. Manufacturers weren't making white refrigerators, not to please her anyway. Oh, and then we have, I don't know if you've done this recently, but when you replace something that's, the refrigerator is a virtual built-in. When a kitchen is framed in, you might call it that, there's a hole left, a space left for the refrigerator. It's no wider because you've got a pantry to the left of it, right? And you've got a knee wall or something to the right of it. And there's a space. You can't put a bigger refrigerator just because they're making mostly bigger refrigerators now. She let me know what the difficulties were, and she did a fine job. We wound up with a stainless refrigerator. It's the only stainless. Oh, but it fits in. You know, you get used to it after a while. Oh, God. Yeah. Well, we could just go on and on, but I don't want to keep you. Don't want to wear out my welcome, as people used to say. KK4JPQ. I'll turn it back to you, Patrick. You have a good night, won't you? 7-3.
Good to talk to you tonight. It's a pleasure, as always. And thank you for the kind words again about being net controller. But the thing about it is, we wouldn't have a net if it wasn't for everybody that checked in. So I do appreciate it. I appreciate it, you hanging out with me and carrying us over to the 10 o'clock hour and see if we can get any more check-ins here. So I'm going to try one more time. Alpha 2 Zulu, Alpha 2 Zulu. Please call KO4HKX.
I'm working third shift tonight, I think. Anyway, please check in Whiskey 4, India Oscar Echo. See it in Fletcher, North Carolina. Hope you and Elise are well. Good evening to you and Elise. Good evening to all on the net. No traffic, no comment.
LZ, I'll have a comment after you recognize him.
We'd like to welcome Mr. Sid. And Sid, looks like the net's still going on over there. I was wondering what was up. We'd like to welcome W4IOE over in Fletcher. And Sid, good to hear you tonight. I hope you and Miss Beverly have a wonderful week. And Andy, go ahead with your comment. KO4HGX.
KI4LZI. That to Patrick from up there. Shane was talking about earlier about the when it comes to the seatbelt light blinking, I'm going to tell you something that happened to me with this Tercel. It's the airbag. Now, this airbag in this Tercel, I've owned it from day one. And this airbag has never, ever been, let's put it this way, used. And the airbag light come on in it just because the battery went dead in the car one time. It did, and somehow in the process it kind of gummed up a sensor in some way or another. I just wonder if whether he's got any kind of situation like that.
It's very possible for that to happen when battery voltage gets down on a car below 10.5 volts. They start to do some crazy things. You'll think they're possessed. I've seen them driving down the road or have them come into the shop with the headlights flashing and the horns blowing and wipers going, but the car's still running. And come to find out, it was just the battery voltage was low. The alternator wasn't putting out enough, and it was just maintaining that enough to keep the car running, but it was sure doing some crazy things. And so, yeah, it can do that. I've seen it before with airbag lights, ABS, the PAT system on the Fords where it loses the anti-theft where the key won't let it start, the theft system. I've seen them do all kinds of crazy things when battery voltage gets low on them.
Well, when I heard him talking about that, I just got to thinking maybe he's got that kind of situation and he don't know yet that he does. I purely found it out just by accident. I went out there to start car one day. It wouldn't start, and the airbag light came on then, and I found out from others since then. It's just the sensor's gone in it. That's all it is. There ain't nothing as far as it's ever been opened up, but on the other hand, it gummed up the sensor somewhat. Larry, when you after you secure the net, KO48, y'all was talking about some calls in here. I've done hit a what? KI4LZI.
Hey, Shane.
KXN4ZLK. Thanks, Patrick. Andy, I appreciate that. No, the battery is fairly new, so, but that is a good thought. I just replaced the battery not too long ago, and we've been on a couple trips even since then, and it's been running fine, but if I hadn't replaced the battery, I would have checked that out because of your suggestion, so I appreciate it.
Run across it just by accident, because my previous car, a 72 Ford Pinto, didn't have all that on it, and I was going to go to some kind of amateur thing out at Central that my group over here was having at the time. I went out there, it wasn't cranked, and the airbag light was on then, and I've checked it out, but someone else checked it out, and it's just a sensor. All that caused it, a sensor lost its memory, I guess, because when the battery went dead, it lost it, and it's been like that ever since. KI4LZI.
I checked a couple things, but I think I might have to go in. I'm not a mechanic like Patrick is, so I just play at one, and sometimes I break things to make it worse. Back to you, Patrick, N4ZLK.
All right. Shane, good to hear you again. Andy, good to hear you, and thanks for stopping by tonight and checking into the net with us. And don't worry about messing my calls on up. I do enough of them that I'm sure not going to say anything when somebody gets mine wrong. Don't worry about it. But I'm going to see if we got any more check-ins here one more time. And Alpha through Zulu, Alpha through Zulu. Please call KO4HKX.
4HKX, K4RO, does it?
KO4HKX, go ahead.
One of those electronic car deals, I guess you could call it. A week ago, got the car, drove out to a place on Woodruff Road, went in, was in there about 10 minutes, came back. That closed at 6, I made it. Came back out to the car, got the car. The car started, but you couldn't turn the steering wheel, and you couldn't get it out of park. Put it in gear. I decided that I'd go home and get on YouTube, see if I could get an answer, find out what button to push, if there was one. And didn't find it. So the next day, had it towed into the dealer about quitting time for them. And a whole lot of money later, found out that supposedly I had a bad computer.
It's very possible. Surprised at how sensitive the electronics in the cars are to different things. I mean, you got to remember that's a pretty harsh environment. All the vibration, the heat cycle, and you know, just daily driving. And so, I mean, it's very possible that it was a computer went out like that. I don't know what kind of car it was, but a lot of cars now have electronic power steering. Instead of having a power steering pump that's driven off the engine, it's just an electric motor that assists, and it's got a steering angle sensor, so it knows where it's at, and if it doesn't read,
then you don't have power steering, and some cars will, some manufacturers will put an interlock in there to do other things, like not come out of gear, you know, different things happen. A lot of them have, or all of them have the, where you have to push the parking brake to pull it out of gear now. That's the safety that has to be there for, so kids can't just pull it out of gear. And that interlock, the brake lights don't work, even though everything's working, but you can have two bulbs burn out. Therefore, it doesn't work. Won't let you take it out of gear. Ford had a big problem with brake switch on the Super Duties, and I can't tell you how many of those I put in because of that exact reason. They couldn't, the truck would start up, but they couldn't get it out of gear. We'd have them calling the dealership all the time. My truck's running, but I can't get it out of gear. And we'd have them walk around and check the brake lights, and sure enough, that's what it would be. And, luckily, they'd had the third brake light on the cab, and it worked, but that wouldn't release the parking brake or the interlock on the transmission. So we had to tell them how to bypass it, and then they could come on in, and we'd fix it for them. It's just a matter of a minute to fix it, but it was one of those things.
This is a 2013 Toyota Highlander that I bought new, and I had managed to put about 40,000 miles on it, and I had absolutely no idea what was wrong with a Joker, but I had to order the part, and I'm telling you, the bill, it ain't cheap.
Not with that, because computer chips right now are at a premium still, and if you can even get them, you're lucky you didn't have an extended wait, to be honest with you, because I've seen cars out there today that they're waiting on a computer and have been waiting on it for 8-9 months. So be grateful that there wasn't an extended wait, but I mean, computers are nice until they're not, and you know, all those creature comforts that we all enjoy, most of that's done by computer control now across the network. That's multi, you know, we call it multiplexing, because this network had to talk to that network before this would happen, and they had to have an algorithm that to communicate, and if it didn't jihad, you wouldn't do nothing. Cars are a lot more complicated than they used to be, let's put it that way.
I'll say they are. This Joker, well, they found out, and I saw before I was leaving the dealership, I was looking under the seats and felt the carpet. The carpet was wet. I didn't have any idea because it wasn't any water on top of the floor mats. And I don't know whether that was the drains got right there around the moon roof got stopped up. Or, well, I don't know where that came from or what's going to be when it's all over with, but the moon roof got in open, couldn't close it, got the windows rolled down, couldn't get them rolled back up. Like I said, it was a doggone mess, and old Richard wasn't doggone bad happy about it, but you know what you gonna do. But if anybody listening and runs into the same thing, you know, it happens. K4ROW.
For HKX, and it's Blue Ridge 2 meter net. Yeah, Richard. Well, it's an inconvenient time. That's why they call it an inconvenience. But my philosophy is on it. if you're going to drive, you're going to pay. Somewhere, somehow, somewhere, somebody. That's just the nature of the beast. They're not getting any less complicated, that's for sure. So I'm dealing with an issue on the wife's car right now. The electronic power steering on 2010 Ford Escape intermittently goes out, and you don't have power steering, just like I was telling you earlier about the electronic power steering. And they've got to put a whole steering column in it. Well, that whole steering column is on back order, and there's no ETA for when it's going to come off. So we don't know when we're going to get one. So in the process of trying to figure out what I'm going to do about that.
I was told I could get the, they could get the computer thing in 7 to 10 days. I feel like a daggum fool for getting rid of my 1974 F-100.
Now, I wouldn't say that, but it does definitely seem like the newer cars, where we rely so heavily on electronics to do certain things, when one thing happens, it does take more to repair it. It's not as simple as it used to be. Now, just a simple window switch, you know, everybody thinks about it, oh, I hit the window switch and I'm controlling the motor to go up and down. Well, technically anymore you're not. All you're doing is sending an electronic signal over to the DIM module, or the body control module, depending on what brand of car it is. And then it sends a signal back to the motor and says, okay, roll up or down, whichever way you push the switch. And that's part of the networking process to cut down on the miles and miles of wire that would be in a car if you didn't have that. That's how they cut a lot of that weight out of there and keep adding the creature comforts. And so, I mean, with more creature comforts comes more problems.
I've replaced a couple of those in this car, I think. A few $100 a pop.
That's not surprising. You got to think about how many times that thing goes up and down to how quick it wears out. If you're somebody like me that rolls the window up and down a lot, you might get used to it. And then there's certain cars out there that never have a problem with it. And a lot of it comes down to some of it comes down to the very basic supply and demand. We've got so much going on cars nowadays that the 12-volt system can't maintain or can't supply the voltage needed. So as voltage goes down, amperage goes up. And now we got these little thin wires in there that they short out at nothing when the amperage gets too high. And it causes more problems with that effect. It goes back to batteries. We were talking earlier with Andy. When battery voltage goes down, amperage goes up. So that's why you get things that are fried. It shorts out different things, and it's like getting hit by lightning. So that's what happens with a car, and the more electrical demand on it, the more likely things are like that are to happen.
Yes, we need better batteries, alternators, and heat sinks.
You're seeing a lot of cars to 36-volt, 48-volt systems is because they couldn't meet the demand for everything going on top of the hybrid stuff. So that's why a lot of that's happening. Just got so many creature comforts and so much going on in a car anymore that the old 12-volt system just couldn't handle it.
Bottom line is, really, I guess we're fortunate to have what we got. Buy fuel and keep them going, especially considering some other things right there.
very fortunate to have what we have and the abilities we have to go and like we do. I mean, most of us don't even think about it. We get in the car, the key worked, it's time to go. Put it in gear, like Larry said a minute ago, and don't even look up before you look around before you back up. But we're fortunate to be able to do that. I mean, we have multiple cars. I mean, I've got three vehicles sitting in my driveway. There's only two of us in the house. And then I own a tool truck on top of it. And so, you know, most people are very fortunate anymore and don't even realize it. You know, long gone are the days where you had one car and you had to both try to figure out how to make your schedules work and get the kids here, get the kids there, and all on a single car. And now everybody, most families have three, four, five cars.
Yeah, I remember when I was little, had two kids to get to school. Dad had to get to work. And somehow, we had to buy groceries to get the kids back home from school.
Roger that. But, Richard, I'm going to see about closing this out and get ready for call it a night. I've got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. So, but I do appreciate talking to you, and I appreciate you coming by. Anything else before we go?
Because I used to have to do that, too. Be at work at 6 and stay there till 6 or 7. It's not any fun. I enjoyed it. Take care. Have a good day tomorrow. Be careful.
K4ROW and KO4HK. Richard, good to talk to you. And pleasure as always. So with that, have I missed anyone for comments or check-in? Please call KO4HK. Here we go. Just invite you to come by tomorrow night. And Mr. Gary is calling to get to the net tomorrow night, KI4DOS. It is Monday night. And so come by and give him a good dose of rider's cramp and hang out and just rag you with him and have a good time. I do appreciate everybody tonight. Thanks for all those that hung around and rag you with me and all those that checked in and all those that are just sitting out there listening. I do appreciate it. With that, I'll send my net report and I'll return shortly. KO4HK now securing the Blue Ridge 2-meter net with our thanks for check-in. We will now return the repeater back to normal amateur use. 7-3 and good night, call. KO4HK, clear.
JBQ, KI4LCI.
KK4JBQ here. Hello, Andy.
You ever get the tone put in and have any luck with the 7-9 yet?
Yes, I put the tone in and had no luck. it's a little bit propagation, perhaps. We're not, as you noticed on the net tonight, it's awfully noisy. The Mount Mitchell repeater. For me, that one is real noisy. Now, this will calm down once the atmosphere calms down. I don't know when that's going to happen. I went out to do some feeding since I was last talking to Patrick, and I took the, because I was interested in the conversation, I took the handheld out. That isn't utilizing the fixed antenna that I have out on the patio, which is attuned. It's tuned to this frequency, so it's as good a job as can be done. The handheld doesn't have that advantage. It's just the little stubby, what do you call it? Rubber duck. I don't know who came up with that, but it's kind of funny. And I kept walking around here and there and the other place to see where I could, where it would pick up. It's still scratchy, but where it would pick up the net, because I wanted to listen to it while I was out there. Well, I found a couple of places, but each time I took my hand away, you know, it went away again just as quick as that. I turned my hand back and took I was capacitive loading is what it is. You know, your body itself becomes a part of the antenna when you get a part of your body next or close to the antenna. And I had work to do. I was, you know, well, so it was kind of spotty. That's why I'm thinking, it's been a long time since I've called the net or spoke on the net with handheld. And when I was doing it earlier, I was just using the outside antenna, replacing the rubber duck, and that worked out fine. But it's a real compromised antenna. Any of them are. I've got several for that. You know, some of these antennas, they're SMA connectors, and I got adapters for all of them to go to B and C. That quick quarter turn bayonet lock for the antenna, that can't be beat. But I guess because of, you know, the small thing that a handheld is, the SMA connectors are popular now. I quickly put an adapter on it and used B and C. So I got a bunch of those antennas, and I tried them all. And seriously, the best one was the antenna that came with the radio. Go figure that. No matter what I tried, it was no better than the original. So I understand the challenge that folks have if that's what they're trying to reach. Well, what is it, 30? Well, for me, it's about 32 miles, air miles, you know, to the repeater site. And that's a big challenge for 2 meters, KK4JBQ.
Well, I was just curious to know. I didn't know, but if you never had the tone, you never would see it, for sure, though, if you didn't have the tone. I was just curious to know about it. When it comes to right here, when it comes to Mount Mitchell, Caesar's Head blocks it up 3/4 of the time. In the summer months, I don't hear it at all. I don't, and Pisgah also 7/6 is blocked for that same mountain range to the left of Caesar's Head, so I don't often hear it. Kind of like the 145.330 up there trying. I believe I've heard it here one time, and that was under some very unusual weather conditions. I can't hear the repeater here reliably at all either, much less get into it.
That's one of the things, although it's a real bugger. It's one of the things I enjoy. The challenge it is, and the why, if you find that you just couldn't reach it, what's the issue? Now, sometimes, like you say, it'll be a mountain range. But sometimes it comes in clear as a bell. Now, why might that be? Well, the tropospheric ducting acts a little bit, not exactly, but a little bit like the ionosphere with 2 meters. 2 meters don't have anything to do with the ionosphere. But the ducting will take that signal and just carry it on because of what it is. Carry it on and the mountain don't make any difference. Those are the fascinating things. You know it when you hear it, if you're aware to listen for stations that you didn't normally get. That rare occurrence is 2 meters would probably be tropospheric ducting. There's a ton of stuff to know, and of course I don't know everything. I'm amazed at what I do know. KK4JBQ.
Join us, come on in. Boy, hell's the guy. Like I told you before, when it comes to the VHF air propagation, if I don't hear it here on the bands, the ham bands themselves, I'll use the NOAA weather radio stations as a check on some of that, because a lot of times I hear ones here that normally I wouldn't hear. I do. Sometimes I hear Charlotte up for every now and then. That one down there at Tocoa on Curry, I hear it here every now and then. And whenever the one on Paris Mountain's off the air, I can hear one here that's from down in the lower part of Georgia. But of course, that 55WXJ21 has to be off the air for me to hear it, but that's how I do most of my VHF judging by propagation off that.
You become a detective. And then you find it to your advantage if you learn a little bit more. And you can explain to yourself why it is you're having a problem or why it is you're hearing something you never would have expected to. And I'm sure HF would be maybe even more so, because you're interacting with the D layer, the F layer, the time of day, with the gray line and all of that. Yeah, that's what keeps us interested in radio. And I hope it stays, as long as I'm here. I hope it continues to work. The sun's doing some radical stuff these days. But I hadn't been following it up until just lately. Well, her nickname is the Space Weather Physicist. She knows a lot about the solar system, a lot about stars like our sun, and how it interacts with the geomagnetic bubble that's around the Earth. That bubble contains all of our atmosphere, which in the fascinating thing, it's just fascinating to me. If the Earth was an onion, just in relative size, you can hold an onion in your hand, and you know the parts of an onion, right? If the Earth was the onion, then the atmosphere that we breathe, that planes fly in, that weather occurs in, rain and snow and fog, all of that, relatively speaking, would be the skin of the onion. That little crispy part, that you pull off that nobody eats, the skin of the onion. That engenders in me a lot of respect, that we can do all that we do in something that thin relative to the mass of the Earth. It kind of shakes me a little bit. But that's what it's like. And the sun, aside from generating our weather and growing crops, stuff like that, it's acting up unlike anything else in my lifetime. Sunspots, they grow. We expected that because we're nearing the peak of, I think it's cycle 25. These cycles come along every about 11 years. And we're right, you know, we're right now nearing the peak of the sun's activity. If it acts as it always has, it'll reach that peak and then it'll start going down. So this propagation for amateur radio, it goes down along with that reduction in the sun's activity. But we've had so many ejections of the coronal mass, the big the sun throwing off a lot of energized plasma is what the surface of the sun is. It's a marvelous thing. We know where it is. We know we revolve around it. We know a whole lot about it, but gracious me, there's no controlling that. If the weather is changing, well, yeah, you would expect that. People aren't mentioning when they talk about weather change and all that. Climate change, yada, yada. Well, the sun is responsible for a great deal of that. And that's far beyond us to do anything about it. Take A4, JBQ.
Well, hell's the guy, that's one thing that was getting me so aggravated here when I found out about my power supply interfering with my reception on HF. Because like I said, I at various times tune in WWV, and at 18 after listening to the solar report about that. You're right, there's quite a few things going on solar-wise right now, and certain types of blackouts, too, are going on in certain times as well. That's why I had to do something about all that noise, come somehow do something about it, and get it to where I could hear it out again without having the S9 to 10 over 9 noise levels.
S9 noise level, that's the signal that you, if you were receiving any signal, you could understand, it would have to be above S9. It would be S9 10 over, maybe. That scale, it's a little funky because it's logarithmic. And logarithms are not easy to explain, so you won't hear an explanation of logarithms here. But it'd be simple enough to say that the change from S7 to S8 is doubling the amount of power necessary to go from 7 to 8, from 8 to 9. It doubles each time. That's not regular math. Logarithms. I used to know what base that was worked on. See, our regular math is base 10. You know why? Because we have 10 fingers. Mathematics evolved, simple mathematics that are easy to add, subtract, multiply, and divide. Those things are easy because in the early days, we used to count on our fingers. Don't you remember that when you were a kid? You counted on your fingers. Well, that's just pretty handy, isn't it? Because the whole mathematical system that we used was right there in both of our hands. Well, it's just natural that we came up with that. Human beings came up with that, of course. But logarithms are different. And so it is with some things in nature. They follow that rather than base 10. If anybody's listening and know what numeral base logarithms are, jump in here. I think we're alone, Andy, but I don't know. Sometimes I know just a little, just enough to be dangerous. KK4JBQ.
About 6 more minutes myself. I was just curious to know if you had had any luck when you did get the tone in it, but like I said, there's a lot of things here that even on this fixed antenna here, I ain't gonna do from here, like I said about that drying repeater. I rarely heard it here, much less get into it. And I doubt that I ever will. It's just, then you look at, if you look on a topo map where I live at, you can see a lot of why. Because I'm down in a hole with hills all around me and only certain areas like where this here's at. Sassafras Mountain, Glassy Mountain's at, that I can manage to get to from.
Well, the more we know about antennas, about generated radio signals and our reception of those signals, well, it can be to your advantage. I'll give an example here. Just today, I had a radio station on the kitchen radio. Now, it's an under-the-counter, it's actually under a cabinet, radio. It's in a perfect spot. It's right in a, you know, one wall meets another wall. It's right in the corner. And it's underneath the cabinet. And when I installed it, oh, goodness, that must have been about 24 years ago now. When I installed it, that thing's holding up, come to think about it. 24 years under the cabinet in the kitchen. It's a nice radio. And having a radio in the kitchen, if anybody's listening, I want to say that, that's a nice thing to have. You don't know how many times you're just sitting and you're waiting for the coffee water to boil or something like that, you know, and you've got a little time. Well, turn on the radio, select a station that you can listen to and learn something or catch a weather forecast or something like that. Well, anyhow, so one of these stations practically disappeared. Well, what it was, two stations were coming in. Their FCC assignments are pretty close to one another, you might say. And I could move around the kitchen, go to the refrigerator, let's say, and I was receiving the station that I wanted to, but then I walk up to the radio. So I understand better why that's occurring. The mystery's gone away, and the problem was solved when I changed the length of the antenna that I had attached to that radio. The interference went away entirely. I'm back to listening, and that didn't affect any of the other stations that I listened to. I checked that. So, practically speaking, knowing what we know, there is an advantage to that in a very practical way. KK4JBQ.
Something started, didn't have to back out, but it's close to 11 o'clock, so I was mainly just wondering about the 7-9 with the tongue, but we'll get on here and talk some more. Like I said, I'm still right now running can only run very low power right now. I hope at some point to get that resolved, but it's not resolved yet. And I got to keep everything at very low power, as you say, for this. It ain't no issue, but for others around, it can be if I even try to get into them. JK4JBQ.
I enjoyed it, and thank you for your concern. If I could get the antenna I have, maybe another 2 or 3 meters in the air, that would probably fix things, but I'm not going to be raising that antenna. I have no problem with the HOA police. You know what I'm talking about. Looking around as they do, I have no problem with them. They see it, they don't recognize it as an antenna. It's only about 7.5 feet tall. The house blocks it, unless you just ride up on it and you can see it. Then you don't know what it is. It looks like a trellis. For a plant to grow up on, you know. So it's disguised. I won't be changing the antenna. I won't be putting up a higher antenna. I will be happy with what I have. This is life. Andy, take care of yourself, won't you? Thank you for calling me out tonight, and good to talk with you. You have yourself a good rest, and I hope a good day tomorrow. This is KK4JBQ. I'm clear.